Welcome to Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. In this segment, we'll hear from a constitutional attorney who will look in depth at the recent same-sex marriage decision by the Supreme Court. His name is Herb Titus. He's a graduate of Harvard Law School with honors way back when. He used to be with the ACLU until he got saved. He actually helped to found and then to lead in its early years Pat Robertson's law school. And Herb even helped co-write an amicus brief that was submitted to the Supreme Court in the same-sex marriage case. Herb, welcome back to Vocal Point.
Thanks for having me, Jerry.
All right. First of all, let's go ahead and get your reaction as a constitutional attorney to the recent decision.
Well, I have to agree with Chief Justice Roberts. This opinion has nothing to do with the Constitution. And what you see in Justice Kennedy's writing is that it's all built upon his own precedents. That's what he relies on primarily, are opinions that he wrote in the past. And he's been on this kick to basically transform the Constitution into some kind of an existential legal document where there are no fixed principles. Everything is fluid and left up to the courts to bring their wisdom to bear upon any particular topic. We do not have, in this particular case, any effort whatsoever to make it even appear that it's based upon the text of the Constitution, its history, and its context. This is the court on a lock of its own.
Okay, so what can we do about it? I mean, I saw recently a statement from, if I understood him correctly, the governor of Ohio, who's a Republican, and he's along the lines of John Kasich, saying something like, well, the court has ruled, let's move on. You know, that's it. It's over. Is that right?
It's been the swan song of every governor that has been in office, except for a precious two or three exceptions, of governors who have shirked their constitutional duty when they do not interpose themselves between a lawless federal order and a state officer who's bound by that particular order, unless the governor basically sets him free to obey his oath to the state and federal constitution and the state statutes. And Jerry, this has basically been the pattern of governors ever since the 1950s, when Governor Orville Faubus and George Wallace stood in the courthouse door. They were wrong substantively, but they were not wrong procedurally.
Ah.
This is the problem we have today.
Oh, that's a good point. In other words, they stood for states' rights, which was one issue, but on the other hand, they were also racist, and that bottom line, you know, that disqualified them morally and in every way.
Well, and what happens is that people don't know the distinction, governors don't know the distinction, lawyers don't know the distinction, and so what we've fallen into is this notion that somehow, whenever the Supreme Court says boo, we obey.
Okay, so what can be done about this? Congressional remedies, you know, what can we do?
Congressional remedies. The primary one would be to withhold appropriations in any area of federal law that administers benefits to so-called same-sex couples. There are appropriation measures that could be taken, for example, to withdraw appropriations from the U.S. Marshals and instructing them not to enforce any federal court opinion or decision that's based upon this recent opinion by the United States government. But you there would have to have a president who would see that he has a duty to check a lawless Supreme Court. And we haven't seen that for many, many years, ever since perhaps Abraham Lincoln.
Hmm. Yeah, as a matter of fact, Abraham Lincoln, in his first inaugural address, basically says he doesn't agree with judicial activism. He obviously must have had Dred Scott as a decision in mind from 1857. But he says something to the effect of, you know, if we accept that the Supreme Court makes their decision and then we the people are stuck with it, then we the people will have ceased to be our own rulers. And that's wrong. And I'm paraphrasing what's right there in the first inaugural address.
Well, and that's true. And, of course, Abraham Lincoln himself refused to enforce a court order handed down by Chief Justice Taney. because he knew, as President of the United States, he had the authority and the duty under the Constitution to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution, not according to the way Chief Justice Taney understood it, but according to the way President Lincoln understood it. And that's what we've forgotten today, is that we have separation of powers and the federal system, and we have different points of view with regard to constitutional matters. And unless there is unanimity among that, we shouldn't be just bowing down to a particular order because they happen to be a court.
Okay, so what would you like to see happen, theoretically? I mean, and what could be done realistically?
Well, if you look at this particular case, there are only four states that are parties to the case: Michigan, Ohio, Kentucky, and Tennessee. That means that the other 46 states are not bound by this opinion. They're not parties to the opinion. One of the things that you can see, Jerry, if you look at the body of the opinion, is they make certain factual assumptions and indeed leave out certain factual questions to decide this particular case. And so in today's legal world, facts mean everything. So the problem is that you have Michigan, who's one of the parties to the case, litigating for Texas, who's not a party to the case. Texas should not be bound by a court decision in which it hasn't been a party and therefore has not been able to make his arguments in favor of his statutes in that particular state. This is the very nature of the legal process. It only applies to cases and controversies. The United States Supreme Court doesn't have the power to pass general rules. General rules is legislating. But today, that's the way the Supreme Court behaves, is that they believe that they're announcing general rules.
Oh, well, not only that, but they're redefining what God himself defined.
Precisely. As a matter of fact, if you read Justice Kennedy's opinion, it's the most atheistic, existential, evolutionary opinion I've ever read in my life.
Wow.
It's just directly contrary to the principles upon which this nation is founded in the Declaration of Independence.
Now, help me to understand here. You're saying that Michigan, Ohio, and what are the other two states?
Kentucky and Tennessee.
Kentucky and Tennessee. You're saying that, okay, the Supreme Court has ruled, and at least in those four states, they have to acknowledge same-sex marriage. Are you saying that for, let's say, Alabama, where 80% of the people in Alabama voted against same-sex marriage when they had it on the ballot and they amended their constitution, and here you've got a strong judge in the Chief Justice, Roy Moore, still opposed to same-sex marriage. Are you saying that Alabama does not have to accept same-sex marriage despite this decision because it only applies to the four states? Is that what you're saying?
That is correct. Now, what's happened in Alabama is you have a renegade federal judge who thinks that the court decision binds Alabama, and even binds Alabama before the mandate comes down. The United States Supreme Court decision back in June 26th is not yet effective. For 25 days, there's a period in which you can file for a rehearing. So it's not even a mandatory hearing at this time. But the federal judge down in Alabama says you've got to behave. You've got to obey it immediately. You find the Fifth Circuit is apparently going the same particular way. These judges, Jerry, are just simply lawless. They don't even read their own rules, much less apply them to themselves.
Could Congress hold hearings somehow related to this case that could somehow change things?
Precisely. This particular case cries out for congressional hearings, where the House ought to call hearings with regard to the relationship of the federal judges to state states and state policy with regard to matters of domestic relations. I mean, one of the things that the Supreme Court has admitted itself is that the law of domestic relations is clearly state law. And no one pretends, Jerry, that the 14th Amendment, as understood by its drafters, had anything to do with the question of what constitutes a marriage. I mean, it's just absolutely lawless. And people need to know that, and they need to take a stand.
Two justices of the Supreme Court that ruled in favor of same-sex marriage themselves were party to, participated in same-sex weddings, as the facilitator, as the judge or justice of the peace or whatever. And wouldn't that be something that maybe they should have been recused?
Well, you would think so. I mean, how could Justice Ginsburg and Kagan, after they participated officially in a same-sex marriage, how could they possibly make a distinction that, well, we don't think the Constitution requires that, but we're in favor of it? Well, they would look foolish to ordinary people. That might pass, you know, with lawyers, and lawyers know the difference between whether it's a constitutional right or whether it's just simply a matter of policy. But these people are typical. This is very typical of judges. When it comes to a recusal motion, they're their own judge, a judge of their own cause. They don't submit it to someone else with regard to whether it's the right thing to do or not the right thing to do.
What do you think about efforts going on now, let's say, within some of the legislators to say, look, regardless of the same-sex marriage decision, we want to make sure we restore religious freedom?
Well, I believe that the religious freedom issue here is a diversionary one, because what it really does, it just simply makes Christians and other people of like religious mind exempt from a law that is otherwise going to be binding on someone else. So it's losing the whole ball game. And it seems to me that Christians should be concerned
about the culture, the country.
Yeah, about the culture and about enforcement of law. I mean, here we have a nation that's built upon the law of God. And what happens to a nation that's built upon that law if the people of God aren't active participants in the civic activities of the nation?
Well, I that's a great point. In fact, I loved your friend of the court brief. I read it, and it made it, one of the points you made in that was that you said that, look, if you say that all the arguments that will be accepted here are only the secular ones, then that itself is incorrect in terms of American history, because our rights come from God according to the founders, and you went ahead and, you know, quoted the Declaration of Independence and so forth. I thought that was a great point. It's almost like we're saying, you know, hey, we can argue all we want to, but we can't have any religious arguments here. Well, wait a minute. What about the founding fathers and some of their religious arguments?
Yeah, and what's so amazing is that religious arguments are inevitable. They just, the problem is the enemy of the church, the enemy of Christ, labels their own arguments as non-religious when, as a matter of fact, they're quite religious.
Ah.
You take Justice Kennedy, he's a professing Catholic, but he has a particular religious belief as a Catholic. He's a Christian existential Catholic, if there is such a thing. And so what he's doing is he's imposing his religious views on the rest of us, and yet he escapes from that criticism because people make an assumption, since he doesn't mention the name of God, that he isn't doing anything religiously. Of course he is.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
R.J. Rush Dooney so aptly pointed, he says, in every society, the very foundation of law is religion. Religion is the basis of law of every nation.
Mm-hmm.
And necessarily so, because it's God who created nations,
yep,
not men.
And if you look, you know, in history, I mean, frankly, the places that are the most free are those that had the most gospel saturation and penetration in the foundation versus those that did not. Now, one of the we only have about a minute left as we're talking with Herb Titus, constitutional attorney, about the same-sex marriage decision. I understand that you said that Justice Kennedy said that no harm comes to anybody through same-sex marriage, and yet I understand that, you know, frankly, the homosexual lifestyle shaves years off of a person's life, generally, on average.
Well, Justice Kennedy actually avoided that question, and he avoided the question by basically saying there isn't enough in the record here to make a decision based upon that matter. Well, it seems to me a decision so important and so vital as this, that's no excuse. They should have decided not to decide the case, to schedule it for a argument, and to have that particular issue briefed.
Well, you know, they wanted to have their own conclusion, and then they got what they wanted. But could hearings be held in Congress to basically show, no, this does bring harm to the people themselves?
Yes, it seems to me that that's one of the first things that the House should do, and in light of what has occurred here, when the court itself hasn't even addressed that question.
Well, this is an issue that's not going to go away, regardless of what some of these liberal politicians, you know, on whichever side of the aisle comes up with. Herb, you have any website you want to refer us to?
Well, you can find my book, God, Man, and Law, The Biblical Principles, on HerbTitus.com.
HerbTitus.com. We're out of time. We're out of time.
Okay.
HerbTitus.com. Thanks so much, Herb. God bless. All the best.
Bye.
Bye-bye.